Hi, my name is Julian Chambliss. I'm a professor of English and a core faculty in the Consortium for Critical Diversity and in Digital Age Research, or CEDR, at Michigan State University. I'm also the Val Behrman Curator of History at the MSU Museum. You are listening to Reframing History.
Define digital humanities as that work that gets done in the overlap of the Venn diagram between humanities and technology. And that happens in a lot of different ways. On one hand, it can be using technological tools to do work of the kind that gets done in the humanities, ask the kinds of questions, whether they're historical or literary or about art history or what have you. But using computational tools that do processing of the data and that assist the researcher in the findings that come out of that work. Or on the other hand, it can be asking more traditional humanities-oriented questions about the computing technologies that we're working with. So it can include digital media studies and questions about the ways that social media are changing how we interact and communicate with one another and so forth. So my sense of digital humanities is that it's super broad, and that it's a constantly shifting and changing field as both the tools shift and the questions shift, and we start to think about new ways of approaching the kinds of interests that the humanities has always had.
I'm a humanist by training, and so I'm concerned about highlighting the human and their experiences. So for me, digital humanities helps to explain the human using digital tools in very creative and innovative ways that traditional humanists like myself who rely on the archives can't do. So instead, how can I get spatial analysis? How can I do different types of things, but also photography, and expand what is the archives, what is the human experience without relying on just traditional texts and traditional sources and containing physical archives?
You know, I try not to, and I really give very little thought to the digital humanities. I mean, it's like everybody uses that term, so you have to use that term. And it strikes me that, like, now it's more just so Matt Kirschenbaum says it's a instrumental term, right? This is a way of in a neoliberal university of being able to brand something that can get resources for humanistic research. I think that kind of makes sense. It's also like, I'd say it's like a community, right? Like DH is kind of the people who call themselves and say, I'm practicing DH in some way. So just kind of like a way of signaling.
Those definitions of digital humanities from Kathleen Fitzpatrick, Hillary Green, and Rob Nelson are a great way to introduce this final episode of season 2 of Reframing History. This season started with a simple-ish question in mind. What about digital humanities? If you've been listening to the entire season, you know the answer is complicated. There are many answers to that question. And the diversity of definition matters in part because thinking about what digital humanities could mean is a central part of the conversation my colleagues and I are having as we define the mission and vision of the Consortium for Critical Diversity and the Digital Age Research, or CEDR. CEDR is a new research collaborative at Michigan State University. As you're probably asking, who are the members of CEDR? Well, Christina Boyles is Assistant Professor of Culturally Engaged Digital Humanities in the Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and American Culture. Christina's work explores the relationship between disaster, social justice, and the environment. Kristen Arroyo is Associate Professor in the Department of Writing, Rhetoric, and American Culture. Kristen's work focuses on the intersection between American Indian rhetoric, multimodal pedagogy, and digital rhetoric. Sharon Leone is Associate Professor in the Department of History. And as you know, she was featured in the third episode of this season. And of course, I too am a member of CEDR. As you will hear, as a group, we embrace the idea that CEDR can be a catalyst to think about the many publics affected by digital humanities. I hope you enjoy listening to our conversation. So we're here with my colleagues from CEDAR, which stands for the Consortium for Critical Diversity and the Digital Age Research, which is a new initiative at MSU. And it's also the reason I personally came to MSU. And I thought it'd be great in the context of this episode of Reframing History to talk to them, because of course the theme for this year, this season was what about digital humanities, right? And I can't really, in my mind, do that without talking to my colleagues who I think of as people who really are deeply engaged with digital humanities. So we're gonna do a round robin and introduce ourselves. And we're gonna start with Sharon, who you've heard before on the podcast, but coming back in a different iteration as part of the team of CEDAR.
There we go. Well, happy to be here with Julian again today. I'm Sharon Leon, and I'm in the history department here at MSU, but I'm also a core faculty member in CEDAR.
Right, and Christina?
Hi, I'm Christina Boyles. I'm an assistant professor of culturally engaged digital humanities. I think that title is super cool, so I like to share it. And I'm in the Writing, Rhetoric, and American Cultures department at MSU.
I'm Kristen Arola. I am also in the Writing, Rhetoric, and American Cultures department at MSU, and I'm also a fully of faculty in the American Indian and Indigenous Studies program, as well as digital humanities.
Right, and of course, I feel like I have to say it. I'm Julian Chambers, your host, and also core faculty at DH and a member of CEDAR. So as always, the way of this, I always ask people, how did you get here? So in this context is, how did you get to become a member of CEDAR? I always use like comic book analogy. So I always think about CEDAR sort of like the X-Men, but that's just me. So how did you guys make your way to MSU to become a part of the consortium? So let's start with Kristen.
Yeah, I ended up at Michigan State after being at Washington State University for 11 years, where I directed an undergrad program on digital technology and culture, and which aligned really neatly with my research interests, which are in American Indian studies and digital rhetoric, kind of more specifically, kind of putting those things side by side, looking at the ways Indigenous communities engage with digital technologies and or what we can learn about our own teaching by looking at Indigenous making practices. And so with that experience behind me coming to MSU, CEDAR, I was actually a CEDAR hire. And so I was hired to work with this group. But, you know, I think as other folks in the group will say, as we've merged and come together and kind of talked about our shared interests and overlaps, I think we are also figuring out first what CEDAR can be and second, what our role in it is. So I guess I came to be here through my interests, through ending up here, but also probably in large part, which connects to my interests, would be that I am always interested in humans first and digital technology second. So I have a very human-centered approach to digital work.
Christina, how did you make your way?
I think I want to say a lot of things similar to what Kristen said. Before coming to Michigan State, I was running a digital humanities center at Trinity College, which is a small private liberal arts school in Connecticut. And I had seen just a handful of jobs that seemed really weird. So I did a very small run of the market in digital humanities in particular. And I was really drawn to MSU's job ad because it did put humans first. It was looking for someone who worked with community organizations, who was interested in cultural issues and really the ways in which identity intersects with digital technology. All of the other interviews I went on, especially given my background being from literature, most of those other jobs were focused on things like text analysis, and they wanted to know, did I know R? And while I have some experience in those areas, those are not the things that excite me about digital humanities, although I do see value in them. And so I was really drawn towards CEDAR in this particular position because it really framed our relationships with digital tools as being human-centered and human-first.
And of course, Sharon Bassett.
Yeah, I also was a CEDAR hire, and the way the hires for CEDAR were structured, they were looking for some kind of elder states people in the field of DH and some kind of newer folks to the field, and I fall into the old folks category to some degree. I had spent 13 or 14 years at the Roy Rosenzweig Center for History and New Media at George Mason University, where I had been the founding director of the Division of Public Projects, which was really focused on doing broadly engaged digital public work. And so I came with that as sort of the base of my connection to the proposed CEDAR mission, wanting really to build infrastructure that made it possible for a larger group of people to get engaged with digital public history and those kinds of things. But in addition to doing that work, I was in the early stages of a project I'm a little bit further along on now about the history of enslavement, really focusing on particularly on the lives and experiences of enslaved people in a particular location and trying to represent them in an ethical way in a digital space. And so I guess probably the connection is both at the broad range about building useful technologies for doing this work that is critical about the ways that a broad group of people engage in a digital space, but also some very specific kind of research goals.
I guess I should say that I too was a CEDAR hire in mm-hmm. the department. I still don't know exactly how they found me, but I was asked to apply. And of course I research comics. I'm a historian in the English department, which isn't weird at all. And I thought this was a great opportunity, and I freely admit that I was really intrigued by the idea of CEDAR as an entity, as it was described in my interview process, because I did a lot of community-based work in my old job, which was a teaching-intensive institution, but we did a lot with the community. We, you know, a lot of my classes were with the community, all the digital things. The only reason I really started to do it was because I wanted to work with the community, in particular communities of color, around questions of like erasure and community narratives and sort of like helping to give voice to community concerns. So at some level, the whole idea of CEDAR, at least as it was explained to me, made a lot of sense to me. And of course, I'm making the move to a place like Michigan, coming from Florida, this is something I want to try to do, I want to explore. Which basically all of us came here with an idea of, I think the idea represented by CEDAR was really intriguing. But that does really get us into a place where we can talk a little bit about what CEDAR is. And it's important for people who listen to the podcast. We are all in different departments, which means we're tenured in different departments. And I think it's fair to describe CEDAR as a dean's initiative, meaning that the dean's office, at least in the context of the English department, was explained to me, really is working with the departments. Yeah, you say you want to hire. I really want this program called CEDAR, and I will give you a line if you'll hire someone in terms of CEDAR. And initially, when I first learned about the position, CEDAR was supposed to be 6 people in the original sort of definition. It's no longer going to be 6 people. The 4 people that you're listening to are going to be the only people in CEDAR. And when we came in, we had to go through a process of figuring out what CEDAR is, right? So we've been going through a series of conversations about that since we've arrived. So I want to ask each member of the group to sort of think about, what does that process meant to you as you sort of envision the possibility of CEDAR? And how does that relate to both the work that you're doing, individual work, and the possibility of sort of collective work represented by CEDAR as we define it, a research collaborative within the broader DHMSU landscape? So let's start with Christina, because Christina recently was on the Liberal Arts Endeavor podcast, which I listened to, which you did a great job. It was great. But she talked a little bit about CEDAR in that interview, and that was a really good answer. So you can start, and then we'll all jump in.
Well, I think one of the most important things for me, given that I'm the most junior member of this group, is I see CEDAR being vital to me as a cohort of people who understand the kind of work I do, who share the same kinds of values, and who are interested in the same kind of things. As I mentioned before, my background's in literature, but I'm in a writing and rhetoric department. And so while many of those two fields' interests do overlap and are shared, there's some areas where I feel less knowledgeable. And so I feel like I'm able to call on members of CEDAR to, I've looked at Sharon for advice on oral history and grant writing, and Kristen on how to translate the kinds of work I do into writing and rhetoric more clearly. And I've talked to Julian about all his work being a great community, working with community organizations and being a leader in the field. So I see this group as kind of a great source of mentorship and support, in addition to a group that can help move the mission of community engaged research forward in Michigan and at MSU.
So, Sharon, I know that you've talked a little bit about the work that you're doing and like your sort of ongoing project, but you also have, as listeners to the earlier episode of the podcast will know, a really strong relationship in terms of the digital infrastructure and working with public humanities. And so I think for you, CEDAR is perhaps both an opportunity that's different, but at some level, maybe it resonates with other things. Can you talk a little bit about how you see CEDAR in that sort of landscape of possibility?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think you're right about that. I think lots of the values that we've come to put at the center of the way that we talk about CEDAR really do echo the kinds of things that have arisen both out of the community that's developed around the open source software project that I run, Omeka, but also the values that are at the heart of public history practice, which is so deeply built around a commitment to shared authority and co-creation, as well as a deep reflective practice. And that's not necessarily, you know, 9 times out of 10, the kinds of things that most historians will tell you about their work. And so there's something different there in community engaged history with digital means attached to it that is at its heart interdisciplinary in a way that CEDAR is also interdisciplinary, but focused around those core values. And you may not think about software development is this sort of culture of bro-y guys who are, you know, hacking things together and things like that. But I would say that really successful open source software development is about focusing on those values as well. Because the creation of a generalized software that lots of people can successfully use really means that we have to have a vibrant conversation about what the needs of the user community are, and what the needs of the developer community are, and how we can all work together to do those sorts of things. So there's a nice layering of these continuing conversations in lots of areas of my life. And I have really enjoyed seeing CEDAR grow out in those similar directions.
And Kristen, I know that when you talked about how you got here, you talked specifically about being interested in the human. When you think about CEDAR and your interest in the human, how are they aligning? How is the pathway that we're on sort of fitting into that?
Yeah, I think, try not to make this too long. I've never really considered myself a digital humanities person. I've considered myself a computers and writing person, which if you come from digital humanities might not mean much to you. If you come from computers and writing, you'd be like, yeah. I was had my fists up there. With the point being that I come and was kind of trained by my PhD, Cynthia Self in particular, who was kind of an old school, she started the journal Computers and Composition, was really interested in the ways that word processing at the time was changing the face of teaching and of writing pedagogy in particular. And so, but she was always very interested in, when I say human first, she was very interested in not so much what's the new cool zoomy thing that technology can do for us. It was more, what are the communities around us and the people with which we engage? What are they looking for? What might they need? And how is technology interfacing with those people in particular ways for the particular context we're in? And so I guess when I think about that lineage and my own work in this group, and particularly my work with American Indian communities and epistemologies. I'm hesitant when I say human-centered, and I'm only saying human-centered insofar as I want to mean not tech-centered, is what I mean when I say that, right? I don't want it to be tech-centered, or I want it to be more in this relational model of seeing, you know, when I ask a question about how people work, what people need, the ethics of a situation, whatever, I want to look at the humans in the situation, the land they're on, the politics in that situation. The technology is part of that too, right? Like all those things in constellation in relation to each other and the ways that they sort of pivot and circulate and constellate with each other. But when I say human-centered focus, especially when I'm thinking about CEDAR, I really just say human-centered insofar as I don't, and I don't think any of us and myself in particular are focused on the tools solely, without all those other things that constellate around it.
Yeah, I mean, I think for myself, I do think of CEDAR as a community-centric exercise, right? I'm like Kristen, at some point, someone just said to me, you know, you're a DH person. Because if you're in a school and no one else is doing it, you know, that old saying, in a room full of blind people, a one-eyed man, I mean, like, it's that kind of thing. And then you start to think about, at least from my own perspective, I started to think about, well, what does that actually mean? And what, given my focus on community, because I only, you know, if I'm forced, I always say, like, yeah, I do Black DH, and, like, I'm working on Black community around very particular set of things. And there are very particular set of people that I'm trying to emulate and trying to understand what they're doing. And the goals are not necessarily academic goals. It's like, did the community enjoy what I did? Did they get some value out of it? And it did not matter my own job at some level because I was getting tenure on other things, right? So I literally would just be like, is everybody okay with what we did? And really inspired by a praxis that was informed by our conversations, because after a while, when you work with a group, their needs become clear and you can follow up on them, right? Even if they don't necessarily say, we want you to do this, if you work closely enough with them, you know that they want X at some level, and then you can check in. And I always thought that, like, CEDAR was supposed to be that at some very basic level. But at the same time, we are a collective, and for a lot of people who might know about Michigan State University, know about MSU, I sometimes joke, but it's not really a joke. It's like the mecca of digital things. There are a lot of digital things that we can associate with MSU. Some of those things are, in digital terms, I don't mean it in a bad way, ancient, like HNET, Matrix. Like, these things are old. In digital terms, they're super old. They're very important, but they're super old. And so they have a lot of, you know, cultural currency. And so, as a group, we're coming in and at some level having these conversations about what CEDAR is as a group, and it fits into the infrastructure of DH. And that really, I think, has been one of the most interesting and rewarding conversations for me as we sort of like talk about what could CEDAR do? Like, what could CEDAR do? Is it going to be a CEDAR thing? Or is it going to be, to continue with my X-Men analogy, we're all off on our individual adventures and only come together when there's trouble, right? So, you know, that really sort of opens up the question of, like, this evolution. And it's important to recognize as a new initiative, we've had really just this 1 year all be here together, right? Because we were hired at different times and arrived on campus at different times. And as we sort of gone through a process of stabilizing, getting to know each other, meeting, writing bylaws. And this bigger question of what could CEDAR be, given our values, because I think we share a lot of the same values, is something we're still talking about, right? So there's no right answer or wrong answer to this next question about, you know, how do we sort of like forecast CEDAR moving forward? What do we hope for? But I think it'd be really interesting to think about what CEDAR as an entity, as a research collaborative, might possibly do first as individual members of the collaborative, but also as a collaborative act, right? Like, you know, what is CEDAR going to take on for itself? And I'm going to throw that question out to Sharon first, but then we'll go around and I'll talk about that too. So what could CEDAR be in that context?
You had to start with me. Because I, just like everybody else in the conversation at the moment, I'm still trying to figure that out, because, you know, one way to go about this is for us to decide that we want to undertake some shared ventures. And I think the ways in which we could undertake those shared ventures might be about trying to identify people who share our values, who might need some support and scaffolding and infrastructure to do similar kinds of work that the rest of us have undertaken in a variety of places throughout our careers. And, you know, all of us have had kind of winding careers in a variety, you know, in lots of little pockets and here and there, and done a lot of different things. But I think uniquely together that the four of us could think about the ways that we could try to provide some of that kind of metacognitive stuff for other people in the field. Digital humanities is so often a field, and I'm fully in sync with this, about doing things that we often don't get the excuse to really step back and articulate the values that surround the choices that we make and those sorts of things, or how to articulate frameworks that let people carry those values forward. And I think that could be one of the really valuable things we could do together.
Kristen, I know that you've been really key in helping us organize. Like, I really appreciate the work that you've done, and like, yeah, we need to work on this. So you know our mission statement. I know you know it by heart. That's a joke. She doesn't know it by heart.
I sure do, Julian.
I'm making that up. She doesn't know it by heart.
I do happen to have it in front of me, though.
Well, that's why I'm asking next, right? Because I know you have the vision statement. And we all worked on this collectively, but yeah. You know, jumping off point for perhaps you the voice your own views on what CEDAR could be.
Yeah, and I know it was kind of fun to go back to this, because we spent a lot of time in conference rooms together with this Google Doc open, like trying to figure out, okay, what is our mission, what is our vision, and what are our goals, what are we trying to do with this? And I like where we end up. It was nice to go back and look at it, quite frankly. And we talk in this about being a catalyst for MSU human-centered digital scholarship and public engagement, specifically anything that's working to promote a diverse future. We talk about being critically and culturally engaged. And then we have these three major goals: reclaiming, preserving, and interconnecting, which I think are pretty cool goals. If we can make that work. And I think really thinking about both riffing off what Sharon just said, I really like that notion of having a space where we get to take the time to think about why it is we're building the infrastructures and want to do the things that we're doing in the first place, right? Or some sort of like slow infrastructure building that's mindful and considering all those constellations, I guess, that surround the things that people actually might want to do and want to achieve. And I think, you know, the four of us together are pretty good at doing that work. A lot of kind of, wait, why, wait, how, okay, that's cool. You know, and it's not that we're naysayers. It's just that I think we're all pretty mindful of like, okay, that sounds awesome. So if you want to do that, like whose community is that impacting? What are the levels of access and infrastructure and human labor and all the things, histories that come with the choices that you're making? And so to provide a space to have those conversations, I think is pretty cool. And also to provide a space at MSU, you know, slowly, I think we've been having Gordon Henry in English has come to us now a couple times for a few things. He works in American Indian Studies specifically, but he came to us looking to hook up with the National Archives Strategic Planning Grant on this CALLS project that they're doing. It's the Center for Anishinaabe Language, Literature, and Storytelling. And that's just kind of getting started. And there was going to be a summer retreat. So we'll see, you know, what happens with that. But the fact that, you know, we we can be a place where someone could come to say, hey, we want to do this Anishinaabe language and storytelling thing. We need a digital component to it. How can we have that conversation together? And for the four of us to, like, you know, talk that through and think about it, I think is pretty cool and pretty exciting moving forward.
Christina, I know that, you know, the work that you're doing in Puerto Rico and the research that you're doing in terms of equity and DH is really important. Does that factor into the vision that you have for CEDAR in a particular way? Is this an amplification of that work, a clarification in some ways, or are there spaces that you want to really cultivate in terms of your work and how CEDAR can be a part of that? Like, talk a little bit about your vision for what CEDAR could be.
Yeah. I think in many ways, the work I'm doing in Puerto Rico has been informed a lot by the conversations that we've had as a group, talking about ethical strategies for building digital infrastructure and working with groups. I'm working on a project called the Maria Memory Bank, which collects stories of Puerto Ricans' experiences during and after Hurricane Maria, and is now going to be expanding to include stories of the Guainia earthquakes, which occurred on the south half of the main island, and of COVID-19. And that project, it tries to work with community organizations that were on the ground that were able to enact disaster response strategies quickly and effectively. And it works with them to document and preserve the kind of materials that they created. So that could be strategies and pamphlets that they handed out to community members or that were within that organization itself for guiding principles, as well as hearing oral stories from members of those groups talking about their experiences. And one of the greatest things I've learned through working with that project is that infrastructure is often the question we come to last when we work on a digital project, but it really should be the one that we focus on first. And so I've spent now a couple years working with groups, and we're constantly reestablishing terms of consent, terms of engagement, because it's an open dialogue with horizontal collaborators. So we all see each other as equally valuable to moving the project forward. And to me, those are the exact kinds of conversations that we are having with CEDAR and the kind of value that we can bring to MSU. I know this past fall that some of us on this team were able to go to the University of Alabama and do what we were calling a CEDAR clinic. And so this was kind of a hands-on moment to enact these values. We talked about, particularly in that instance, the use of Omeka S and the ways in which you can enact some of the values we've been talking about through the use of that tool. But I could see a growth of that. So we could talk about different topics or different tools that we're using and the ways in which we think about the ethics behind those decisions first, and that could then inform community groups or other digital humanists or other us in a variety of connected fields on the choices they're making as they start to build these kinds of projects.
Well, you know, I think this idea of consulting and really just from personal experience, having an opportunity to talk with people about the work, especially digital work, which interdisciplinary work in academia, we talk a lot about how much we love it. We struggle with how we actually support it. And I think DH is probably really one of the worst elements of that, right? Because it's neither here nor there at some level for a lot of people. It sits as a very public entity that can be attached to a person or institution. So it has a weird kind of traction for administrators. I mean, I have a lot of stories about conversation with people in charge about DH, and they're always good at some level because, like, they care, but the reason that they care has a lot to do with, like, this sort of public persona, which is attached to a very big question about the value of education, and that almost always gets you involved in discussions about the decline of the humanity or neoliberal influence in terms of the academy. And at some level, you know, those conversations about what matters in terms of education, what matters in terms of higher ed and its impact on society, they're sort of, they're impossible to get away from, I think, when you're talking about the age. Like, they're just impossible to get away from. And so, to me, like, yeah, it's really interesting that we have an opportunity to think about that. And the name that they came up with kind of suggests stuff to me. I've always felt like, critical diversity in a digital age research. I'm like, well, you know, you asking us to ask questions, basically. So I think that's probably gonna continue to be a thing. We'll see how that goes over time. We're all living in the kind of pandemic world, and so there's a huge question for us. Like, as a group, if you're listening to this podcast, probably by the time this gets out, we'll be deep into the summer, and hopefully you and your family and all your friends and your institutions and your communities stabilize, and we're in a kind of post-COVID world. I'm not going to say go back to normal, because, like, I just don't believe in that at this point. But for us, this question of the future is going to be caught up in broader institutional discussions, right? Like, some of the things that we want to do, some of the things that we can do are going to be attached to our institution, how it is, as it's going to be for many, many, many academics across the country and around the world. But this was a great opportunity for us as a group. So I'll talk a little bit about CEDAR. And again, to think about, you know, when we talk about digital humanities, what do we mean? Well, for our group, it means a lot, as you heard, about engaging with the community, thinking about the consequences of technology, thinking about culture in a very particular way. And I'm happy that my colleagues were willing to take the time. So I talk a little bit about themselves, talk about the work of the group. And hopefully you'll be able to hear more about us and find out more about our stuff as we move forward. We don't actually have a website. Usually I ask people, oh, if they want to follow up with your work, like, where did you go? CEDAR technically doesn't have a website right now, right?
Not yet.
Right. Yeah. So just keep your eyes out. Google MSU and CEDAR. We do stuff.
We don't have a website because we're not technology first.
Boom! Drop the mic. Walk away. That was a great answer. I'm going to end on that answer because that was so awesome. It was so rock hard. It was awesome. Okay, so thanks for talking to me, guys. Say bye.
Thanks, Julian. Bye.
Thank you, Julian.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Reframing History. This is an Anchor podcast that you can subscribe to on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you find your podcasts. Please join us again for our next episode.